You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Thursday edition, and this is part two of a two-part show. Last night I was running long, so I had to cut off the testimony, and I'll pick it up close to where I stopped. And this will be the last show that I really dedicate a large portion of it to the Senate impeachment trial of President Donald Trump. If you're a regular listener, you know I thought this was a bad idea from the start. I think it's dangerous. I think it's a direct threat to our Constitution. And I think the Democratic Party will pay a very, very high price for doing this. People are watching, pay attention. Not everybody. Like I said, most people are concerned about a few things and know a lot about a few things, but most things they don't care about and know next to nothing about. Now, I focused in on this because this is the first time that, in my mind, the impeachment process and the impeachment, it was totally wrong. I don't care if it was a Democrat or a Republican or an independent. This should not have happened. And the fact that the Democrats did it just indicates how far they've gone in terms of being corrupted, how far they've gone to the left. And this is dangerous, because if they were to succeed, then both parties would do it. It sets a very terrible precedent. And what's worse about it even is they're lying about it. And I'm talking about, in particular, Chairman Schiff of the House Intelligence Committee, which is the lead manager of this. And that's why I want you to see and listen to, well, you can't see it, but I give you a lot of my show prep in terms of articles, cartoons, as well as YouTube videos. And yesterday and today's testimony, it's three lawyers, their final presentation, is the heart of it in terms of trying to get the facts out. The biggest problem I have, and I think a lot of people have. See, I followed the hearings in the Intelligence Committee, and I'm glad I did. I was interested in this to see, okay. I'm very much open-minded. If you have evidence of any president committing serious felonies or a combination of felonies and wrongdoing, I'm open-minded. I want to hear the evidence. But they didn't have evidence. This is about a six-minute telephone conversation. Can you believe that? Six-minute telephone conversation. The transcript is out there. See, that's the big surprise. That's the joker, if you will. I firmly believe that Adam Schiff and the whistleblower, and he's the gentleman that launch this in the sense of a complaint, the staff of Schiff's staff on the Intelligence Committee, together with the whistleblower, spent almost 2 weeks putting together a complaint that they filed with the Central Intelligence Agency under the whistleblower statute, and thinking, initially, I think they were planning to have the whistleblower testify. But you see, what happened is, and the whistleblower was not on the telephone conversation. He's a Democratic activist, worked in the Obama White House, worked for Joe Biden, He was tasked or assigned to the White House in the early months of the Trump administration. He's one of these holdovers. But he wasn't silent. Most people, they knew that he really didn't like Trump, and he really was an Obama supporter, and he was leaking information. And I thought, initially, Adam Schiff wanted this person to testify. But once that whole house of cards fell down when Trump released the transcript, in my mind, that's the best evidence. And you got to keep in mind, there are many people listening on that phone call. This was a scheduled call between the United States president and the Ukrainian president. There are a lot of people on this end, as well as in Ukraine, listening on it. So I would not be surprised if you had recordings of it. I suspect the National Security Agency does, if not the White House. But a transcript was prepared, and it totally refutes what the whistleblower said. And the whistleblower supposedly based what he was saying on conversations with six officials. We don't know who they are. Probably working at the National Security Council. That's where this gentleman, prior to being re-signed back to the CIA, was assigned. And we know his name. It's no secret. And I put his picture on, actually several pictures, and a little bit about his background. See, here's what I find, in addition to they never should have done this, it's how they did it, the so-called process in the House. House Republicans wanted to call witnesses, and it's fairly routine that both political parties can call witnesses. In this case, that didn't happen. It was only the Democratic Party under Schiff that called 18 witnesses. When I say called, they were called to, you know, report to a room in the basement where they testified, depositions were taken, and there were 18 of them, of which 17 subsequently testified on television in an open hearing. And the essence of what they testified to, there obviously was policy differences. They thought the policy should be this, and Trump did that. That's not a grounds for impeachment. They had, except for, I think, two, none of them had firsthand knowledge of the conversation. I think maybe one or two exceptions, none of them had met President Trump. Overwhelming majority were not on the conversation. And you ask yourself, well, why are they witnesses? Good question, because normally in a courtroom, like if this was in a court case, a federal case, state case, the judge wouldn't allow it because they have no knowledge of the so-called, quote, crime. In other words, it's hearsay. So in this case, it's the CIA analyst back at the Central Intelligence Agency, got information, took it to Schiff instead of taking it to the CIA and filing a complaint. He first took it to Schiff's staff. His staff and him worked on it. Now, supposedly, Adam Schiff denies he knows the name. I don't believe that. I think a number of people in the staff know it, and at least one probably told Schiff. But once it became clear that the president had released this, and really you could read it yourself, it's still out there. I posted it on at least one or two occasions, but you can Google it and get it. I read it and said, so what? There's nothing here. There's, as Donald Trump likes to call the call perfect. I don't call it perfect, but there certainly doesn't even come close to being an impeachable offense. There's no crime here at all. It doesn't mean you have to have a crime, but usually in most impeachments, you have a crime, a serious crime, high crimes and misdemeanors, and they're spelled out. So I wanted to wrap up the testimony and then hopefully move, time permitting, move to the there was an economic report out by the Bureau of Economic Analysis it is the final Friday in the month, publishes the estimate of gross domestic product. So I'll be talking about that, mainly because it's below the trend line. The average growth in GDP over 40, 50 years, depending on when you start and end, is roughly between 3 and 3.5%. Well, I won't keep you in suspense, but the final quarter, and this is the advance estimate, and we have a second estimate and a third estimate. So usually the second and third are much better, but it could go up and down. You don't know which way they're going to go. It looks like that the United States is running about, I call it, two-thirds speed. If we were just doing the average trend line, we'd be doing between 3 and 3.5. But if you look at the statistics, we're consistently, well, there are some months where we're near or at 3%, but the U.S. economy is typically now between 2 and 2.5%. So I'm going to go over what I think there are the reasons. Let me have to get to the right place where I left off, or roughly where I left off. Okay, this is Jay Sekulow. There might be some, there is some overlap, and I'll pick it up there.
Elections. That's what policy differentials and differences are discussed. But to have a removal of a duly elected president based on a policy disagreement, that is not what the framers intended. And if you lower the bar that way, danger, danger, danger. Because the next president, or the one after that, he or she will be held to that same standard? I hope not. I pray not that that's not what happens. Not just for the sake of my client, but for the Constitution. You know, Professor Dershowitz gave a list of presidents from Washington to where we are today who, under that standard that they are proposing, could be subject to abuse of power or obstruction of Congress. Look, we know that what this is not about a president pausing aid to Ukraine. It's really not about a phone call. It's about a lot of attempts on policy disagreements that are not being debated here. My goodness, how much time? How much time has been spent in the House of Representatives hoping, they were hoping, that the Mueller probe would result in, I mean, I'm not going to play you, I was thinking about it, playing all the clips from all the commentators the day after Bob Mueller testified. Bob Mueller was unable to answer under his examination basic and fundamental questions. He had to correct himself, actually. He had to correct himself before the Senate for something he said before the House. So that's what the president's been living with. And then we're here today arguing about what? A phone call to Ukraine? Or Ukraine aid being held? Or a question about corruption? Or a question about corruption that happens to involve a high public profile figure? I mean, is that what this is? Is that where we are? And then what do we find out? The aid was released. It was released in an orderly fashion. The reform president, President Zelensky, wins, but there was a question whether his party would take the parliament. It did. They worked late into the evening with the desire to put forward reforms. So everybody was waiting, including, and you heard the testimony from, I will say, their witnesses. You heard the testimony. Everybody was concerned about Ukraine. Everybody was concerned about whether these reforms could actually take place. Everybody was concerned about it. So you hold back. Didn't affect anything that was going on in the field. We heard Mr. Crow worrying about the soldiers. I understand that. I appreciate that. But none of that aid was affecting what was going on the battlefield right then or for the next 4 months because it was future aid. And are we having an impeachment proceeding? Because aid came out 3 weeks before the end of the fiscal year? Or a 6-minute phone call? You boil it down, that's what this is. It's interesting to me that everybody's saying, well, the aid was finally released September 11th, only because of the committee and the whistleblower we've never seen. Mr. Philbin dealt with that in great detail. I'm not going to go over that again. But you know, the new high court, the anti-corruption court, wasn't established and did not sit until September 5th, 2019. So while the president of Ukraine was trying to get reforms put in place, the court that was going to decide corruption issues was not set until September 5th. I want you to think about this for a moment, too. They needed a high court of corruption for corruption. I mean, think about that for a moment. Now, that's good that they recognized it. But remember when I said the other day, you don't make wave a magic wand and now Ukraine doesn't have a corruption problem? The high court of corruption, which they have to have, because it's not just past corruption. They're concerned about ongoing corruption issues. And you could put all of your witnesses back on under oath in the next hearings you'll have when this is all over. And you're going to be back in the House and we'll be doing this again. Put them all back under oath and ask them, Mr. Schiff, is there a problem of corruption in Ukraine? And if they get up there and say, no, everything is great now, hallelujah. But I suspect they're going to say, we're working really hard on it. And I believe them. But this idea that it was just vanished and now we're back into everything's fine, it's absurd. Mr. Morrison testified that while the developments were taking place, the vice president also met with President Zelensky in Warsaw. That was the meeting of September 1st. The one, by the way, where the vice president's office said, in response to this New York Times, nobody told him about aid being held or linked to investigations. Are you going to stop? Are you going to allow proceedings on impeachment to go from a New York Times report about someone that says what they hear is in a manuscript? Is that where we are? I don't think so. I hope not. What did Morrison say? He heard firsthand that the new Ukraine administration was taking concrete steps to address corruption. That's good. He advised the president that the relationship with Zelensky is one that could be trusted. Good. President Zelensky also agreed with Vice President Pence, this is interesting, that the Europeans should be doing more. And related to Vice President Pence, conversations he'd been having with European leaders about getting them to do more. In sum, the president raised two issues he was concerned with to get them addressed. Now, I've already went over, again, this is just the closing moments here of this proceeding, of our portion of this proceeding. Aid was withheld or paused, put on a pause button. Not just for Ukraine. Afghanistan, South Korea, El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, Lebanon, and Pakistan, and I'm sure I am leaving countries out. But do you think the American people are concerned if the president says, you know, before we give a country, I don't know, $550 million, some countries only $400 million, we'd like to know what they're doing with it. You're supposed to be the guardians of the trust here. It's the taxpayers' money we're spending. There was a lot of testimony from Dr. Fiona Hill, John Bolton's deputy. Here's what she said about aid was being held. This is her testimony. There was a freeze put on all kinds of aid and assistance because it was in the process at the time of an awful lot of reviews of foreign assistance. Oh, you mean there was a policy within the administration to review foreign assistance and how we're doing it because we spend a lot of money. And by the way, I'm not complaining about the money. I don't think anybody doesn't want to help. But we do need to know what's going on. And those are valid and important questions. Manager Crow told you that the president's Ukraine policy was not strong against Russia. But Ambassador Yovanovitch stated the exact opposite. She said in her deposition that our country's Ukraine policy under President Trump actually, her words, got stronger than it was under President Obama. So again, policy disagreements, disagreements on approach. Have elections. That's what we do in our republic. For three long days, House managers presented their case by selectively showing parts of testimony. Good lawyers show parts of testimony. You don't have to show the whole thing. But other good lawyers show the rest of the testimony. And that's what we sought to do, to give you a fuller view of what we saw as the glaring omissions by my colleagues, the House managers. The legal issues here are the constitutional ones. And I have been, I think, pretty clear over the last week, starting when we had the motions arguments, that my concern about the constitutional obligations that we're operating under. I have been critical of Manager Nadler's executive privilege and other nonsense. I want you to look at it this way. Take out executive privilege. First Amendment free speech and other nonsense. The free exercise of religion and other nonsense. The rights to due process and other nonsense. The rights to equal protection under the laws and other nonsense. You can't start doing that. You would not do that. No administration has done that. In fact, since the first administration, George Washington, they wanted information. He thought it was privilege. He said it was executive privilege. But let's not start calling constitutional rights other nonsense, lumping them together. Of course, this is from a House of Representatives that actually believes the attorney-client privilege doesn't apply, which should scare every lawyer in Washington, D.C. But more scary to the lawyers would be for their clients. They say that in writing, in letters. They don't hide it. I would ask them, I'm not going to, it's not my privilege to do that. Do you really believe that? Do you really believe that the attorney-client privilege does not apply in a congressional hearing? Do you really believe that? Because then if it doesn't apply, then there is no attorney-client privilege. Or is that the attorney-client privilege and other nonsense? Danger, danger, danger. We believe that Article 1 fails constitutionally. The president has constitutional authority to engage and conduct foreign policy and foreign affairs. It is our position, legally, the president at all times acted with perfect legal authority, inquired of matters in our national interest, and having received assurances of those matters, continued his policy that his administration put forward of what really is unprecedented support for Ukraine, including the delivery of military aid package that was denied to the Ukrainians by prior administrations. You know, some of the managers right here, my colleagues at the other table, voted in favor of wanted Javelin anti-tank missiles for Ukraine. Some of the members here did not. Didn't want to do that. Voted against that. I'm glad we gave it to them. I'm glad we allowed them to purchase Javelins. I tell you, I never served in the military. I have tremendous, tremendous respect for the men and women that protect our freedom each and every day. Tremendous respect for what they are doing and continue to do. But this president actually allowed the Javelins to go. Some of you liked that idea. Some of you did not. It's a policy difference. Were you going to impeach President Obama because he did not give them lethal aid? No, nor should have you. You should not do that. It's a policy difference. Policy difference do not rise to the level of constitutionally mandated or constitutional applications for removal from office. It is policy differences. By the way, it's not just on lethal weapons. And President Obama, as I said, withheld aid. He had the right to do that. You've allowed him to do that. Oh, but we don't like that this president did it. So the rules change. So this president's rules are different than, he has a different set of standards he has to apply than what you allowed the previous administration to apply. And you know what? Or the future administration to apply. That's the problem with these articles. We've laid out, I believe, a compelling case on what the Constitution requires. When they were in the House of Representatives putting this together, did they go through a constitutionally mandated accommodations process to see if there was a way to come up with something? No, they did not. Did they run to court? No. And the one time it was about to happen, they ran the other way. Separation of powers means something. It's not separation of powers and other nonsense. If we've reached now, at this very moment, in the history of our republic, a bar of impeachment because you don't like the president's policies or you don't like the way he undertook those policies, because we hear a lot about policies. If partisan impeachment is now the rule of the day, which these members and members of this Senate said should never be the rule of the day. My goodness, they said it, some of them, 5 months ago. But then we had the national emergency. A phone call. It's an emergency. Except we'll just wait. But if partisan impeachment based on policy disagreements, which is what this is, and personal presumptions, or newspaper reports and allegations in a unsourced, maybe this is in somebody's book who's no longer at the White House, that becomes the new norm. Future presidents, Democrats, Republicans, will be paralyzed the moment they are elected, before they can even take the oath of office. The bar for impeachment cannot be set this low. Majority Leader McConnell, Democratic Leader Schumer, House managers, members of the Senate. Danger, danger, danger. These articles must be rejected. The Constitution requires it. Justice demands it. Majority Leader, we would ask for a short recess if we can, about 15 minutes.
These articles of impeachment are dangerous. They're a threat. It shouldn't be easy, doesn't matter which party, to remove a president that was elected fair and square by over 62 million American citizens. They not only want to remove him from office, they want to remove him from the ballot. This is a perfect example of interference in the 2020 election. We're about a little over nine months away from election day, November 3rd, 2020, Tuesday. Keep that in mind. I don't want a small group of senators to be able to remove a president on false charges. This was they didn't have a weak case. They didn't have a case. And the process was flawed for a number of reasons. The biggest reason is the Republicans could not call witnesses. And the president's own attorney was not present. Yeah, they had 18 witnesses. They deposed them, knowing what they were going to say. 17 were called back. And it was over policy differences. Obama called John McCain. There was a meeting at the White House. And reminding him, elections have consequences. Well, elections do have consequences, and so do impeachments. It was known that it was a foregone conclusion in my mind that President Trump was going to be acquitted. Why would they foolishly do that? Well, I think the answer is obvious. They wanted to smear. This is a continuation of the smear campaign. And I'm not going to minimize the role of the so-called press, mainstream media. I call them the big lie media mob that echoes and amplifies and lies to the American people. To the extent is all these networks and newspapers have declining readership and viewership and listenership. That's what happens when your former viewers, subscribers, don't trust you anymore. Many newspapers have gone out of business. This is a long-range trend, by the way. It's only getting worse. Look at the ratings. Look at CBS, for example, or CNN or MSNBC. Who wants to watch propaganda? Apparently, very few people. I'm amazed that the owners are subsidizing this. It has to be subsidized because if it had to stand on it, if they, each entity here had to stand on their own feet, they wouldn't be making money. They'd be losing money. So don't trust the big lie media mob in New York City and Washington, D.C. They're in cahoots and interfering in the 2020 election with the Democratic Party. And they will pay a price. I think both the Democratic Party will pay a very high price, as will big lie media. I call it junk journalism. Donald Trump calls it fake news. It's progressive propaganda, and this was a good example of a progressive propaganda stunt. A stunt. It's not sitting well with the American people. It's not playing well across this country. And mark my words, come November, a lot of Democrats are going to be thrown out of office. And barring a major recession, and the economy's still growing, folks, still growing, July will be 11 years of economic expansion. That's a record, and the record's getting longer. And if it continues, Donald Trump will be unbeatable. Is there a but in there? Yes, there is. If the economy goes in a recession, in other words, two quarters of negative growth, then the election race for president will be very, very tight. I don't see that happening. The economy is slowing down, but guess what? Many countries in Western Europe and Asia are either in a recession or going into a recession. So why I'm critical of the growth rate being only around 2-2.5%, well below 3-3.5%. The good news is we're growing. It's positive. We're not seeing mass layoffs. We don't need this. Think about it. The Democrats, the radical extremists, Democrat socialists, I call them the Reds for short, are so obsessed with this. This causes uncertainty, not only in financial markets, but also in the economy. They don't care about that. And they certainly don't care about the Constitution. They like to wrap themselves in the Constitution. That's unfortunate, because this is probably the biggest threat to our constitutional republic in its history. What they're doing is what tyrants do. Fortunately, they're not going to succeed, but they could succeed. Finally, let's hear the wrap-up. This is the White House counsel, Phil
Baloney.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the Senate. Well, I had kind of a lengthy presentation prepared, but I think you've heard a lot from our side, and I think we've made our case. And so I just want to leave you with a couple of points. First of all, thank you, Mr. Leader, and thank you, Democratic Leader Schumer, and all of you, for the privilege of speaking on the floor of the Senate and for your time and attention. We really appreciate it. We've made three basic points. One, all you need in this case is the Constitution and your common sense. You just look at the articles of impeachment. The articles of impeachment fall far short of any constitutional standard. And they are dangerous. And if you look to the words from the past that I think are instructive, as I said last night, they're instructive because they were right then and they're right now. And I'll leave you with some of those words.
There must never be a narrowly voted impeachment or an impeachment supported by one of our major political parties and opposed by the other. Such an impeachment will produce the divisiveness and bitterness in our politics for years to come and will call into question the very legitimacy of our political institutions.
This is unfair to the American people. By these actions, you would undo the free election that expressed the will of the American people in 1996. In so doing, you will damage the faith the American people have in this institution and in the American democracy. You will set the dangerous precedent that the certainty of presidential terms, which has so benefited our wonderful America, will be replaced by the partisan use of impeachment. Future presidents will face election, then litigation, then impeachment. The power of the president will diminish in the face of the Congress, a phenomenon much feared by the founding fathers.
This is a constitutional amendment that we are debating, not an impeachment resolution. The Republicans are crossing out the impeachment standard of high crimes and misdemeanors, and they are inserting the words any crime or misdemeanor. We are permitting a constitutional coup d'etat, which will haunt this body and our country forever.
I warn my colleagues that you will reap the bitter harvest of the unfair partisan seeds you sowed today. The constitutional provision for impeachment is a way to protect our government and our citizens, not another weapon in the political arsenal.
I expect history will show that we've lowered the bar on impeachment so much, we have broken the seal on this extreme penalty so cavalierly, that it will be used as a routine tool to fight political battles. My fear is that when a Republican wins the White House, Democrats will demand payback.
Now, those were all Democrat congressmen. Many of them, some of them are still in the House of Representatives, namely Nadler. But most of them have moved on to the Senate. And those were Democrats making Trump's case.
You were right. But I'm sorry to say you were also prophetic. And I think I couldn't say it better myself, so I won't. You know what the right answer is in your heart. You know what the right answer is for our country. You know what the right answer is for the American people. What they are asking you to do is to throw out a successful president on the eve of an election with no basis and in violation of the Constitution. It would dangerously change our country and weaken forever all of our democratic institutions. You all know that's not in the interest of the American people. Why not trust the American people with this decision? Why tear up their ballots? Why tear up every ballot across this country? You can't do that. You know you can't do that. So I ask you to defend our Constitution, to defend fundamental fairness, to defend basic due process rights, but most importantly, to respect and defend the sacred right of every American to vote and to choose their president. The election is only months away. The American people are entitled to choose their president. Overturning the last election and massively interfering with the upcoming one would cause serious and lasting damage to the people of the United States and to our great country. The Senate cannot allow this to happen. It is time for this to end, here and now. So we urge the Senate to reject these articles of impeachment for all of the reasons we have given you. You know them all. I don't need to repeat them. They've repeatedly said over and over again, a quote from Benjamin Franklin, "It's a republic if you can keep it." And every time I heard it, I said to myself, It's a republic if they let us keep it. And I have every confidence in your wisdom. You will do the only thing you can do, what you must do, what the Constitution compels you to do. Reject these articles of impeachment for our country and for the American people. It will show that you put the Constitution above partisanship. It will show that we can come together on both sides of the aisle and end the era of impeachment for good. You know it should end. You know it should end. It will allow you all to spend all of your energy and all of your enormous talent and all of your resources on doing what the American people sent you here to do, to work together, to work with the president, to solve their problems. So this should end now, as quickly as possible. Thank you again for your attention. I look forward to answering your questions. And with that, that ends our presentation. Thank you very much.
Today, the senators were asking questions. Most of them were softballs. And I'm not going to play the questions and the answers. I think that's, unfortunately, a waste of time. I think objectively, if they had common sense and they were fair, the vote should go 100-0 for acquittal. That's not going to happen. It's not even going to be close to 100. I think at best, probably the Republicans will get a total of 55 votes. That's assuming all the Republicans and at least two Democratic senators vote for acquittal. And I think that's the likely outcome. But that's far, far short from 100-0. The Democrat Party, especially the extreme wing of it, the radicals, the Reds, they wanted this impeachment. They demanded it of their own leadership, even though many in the leadership knew this would not help them, first and foremost, win in November in terms of their own seats and Senate seats, and most likely would make it difficult, if not possible, for whoever the Democratic candidate is for president to win. This was a very spiteful and, yes, dangerous, and will have, I think, significant negative consequences on the Democratic Party. I hope I'm right, because neither of these parties is financially responsible. They're not even concerned about it anymore. And what I mean by that is balanced budgets. But balanced budgets where you have low taxes and limited government, in other words, significantly lower government spending. Neither party is up to that job. That's why I don't vote for Democrats or Republicans anymore. They both have betrayed the American people. They've betrayed the Constitution. They've betrayed their oath of office. They're financially irresponsible. And most of them are bought and paid for and do the bidding of those that make the largest contributions to their campaign. Their focus is on getting power and keeping power. It's all about power, and that's what this impeachment process was about, power. It's not about a six-minute telephone conversation, nor a few weeks of delay or holds on security assistance money. No, it's about power. How can we keep our jobs or keep our power positions? And how can we throw out President Trump despite his fairly winning the election? And I think Donald Trump was surprised, as many Democrats were, that he won. Remember, most Democrats thought, as well as big lie media supporters of Hillary Clinton, that Hillary Clinton was going to win. And because of that, you had people in the government, primarily in the intelligence community, in the FBI, the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency, and in the White House and the National Security Council, key Obama advisors, and even the President of the United States himself, Barack Obama, authorized a fraudulent and illegal spying and surveillance of Donald Trump and the opposition Republican Party, those Republicans assisting Donald Trump in his campaign. It's against the law. These are felonies. But that didn't stop them because they thought they were above the law, truly above the law. And they really believed that Hillary Clinton was going to win. But she didn't. Thank God she didn't. And now we're on the verge. Sometime this year, indictments will be coming out, indicting the plotters, the conspirators that were engaged in an illegal spying activity, trying to come up with dirt. Leverage is what they call it on Donald Trump. These are people that truly believe their ends justify any means. We saw it in the previous administration, arrogance and criminal activity to invade the privacy of American citizens. And if they can do it to Donald Trump and the Republican Party and the people supporting Donald Trump, they can do it to anybody. This is a direct threat to your freedoms and liberty. And they did it. So you shouldn't be surprised that after Donald Trump won and was started his administration, they had been planning all along to smear him again and again. They were hoping that the Russian investigation, that never should have happened. Mueller came up with nothing. The conclusion was neither Donald Trump or the people in his campaign did not conspire with Russians, not at all. The people that were engaged in a conspiracy were high government officials and leadership of the Democratic National Committee, who funded this opposition research that became the Christopher Steele dossier. Hillary Clinton's campaign and the Democrat National Committee. And they were paying for dirt, rumors, really unverifiable information. And where did they get it? Russian government officials. It didn't work. And this impeachment is not going to work. But it was close, ladies and gentlemen, very close. Because you need to recognize if Hillary Clinton had won, you wouldn't have known about the intelligence community's conspiracy. And obviously, we wouldn't have an impeachment proceeding. The only thing politicians understand, I don't care if they're Democrats or Republicans, and pay attention to is when they're voted out of office. In this case, they need to be punished. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I live in one district in Dallas, Texas. But I certainly understand now that the Democratic Party today is not led by conservatives, moderates, or even liberals, but radicals, radical extremists, Democrat socialists. And it looks like, remember, we're approaching the Iowa caucuses. Right now, it looks like Bernie Sanders should win. That's how left the Democratic Party has become. And he's not the only red, by the way. Elizabeth Warren is still in the running, as are several others. And given the hearings, this trial, more and more Americans are acutely aware of the details and the condoning by Joe Biden of his son's activities in the Ukraine. He got paid over $1 million a year for 5 years from Ukraine. He didn't have any expertise, and I'm talking Hunter Biden, and his friend Devin Archer had no experience in oil or gas. Didn't speak Ukrainian, no real experience with board governorship, and they were paid an outrageous salary. Why? Because the corrupt oligarch that owned Burisma wanted to make sure he had access to Joe Biden, and indirectly, that's what happened. And Joe Biden goes over there and gets the prosecutor general fired because he had launched an investigation into Burisma, the gas company. So in my mind, although Joe Biden is still a factor, all of this will catch up to him because the Ukraine is just part of the story, an important part, but it doesn't sit well with the American citizens. We heard testimony from the Republican counsel attorney making a very, very good comparison. Hunter Biden was getting in excess of $100,000, a fee of $83,333 plus additional money. If you add all that up, and that's monthly, multiply by 12, you're going to get over $1 million. The average American household doesn't even come close in terms of their household income. This is not going to sit well with the American people. And yes, the Republican Party, if Joe Biden should become their candidate, will exploit this. And they should. Call it crony capitalism. I call it corruption. very clear-cut. All Joe Biden had to say in 2014 when he first heard of this is to call his son and say, "What are you doing? Are you out of your mind?" That call was apparently never made. His son was raking in a lot of money, $1 million a year, and he kept on raking it in to April of 2019. So there are consequences of impeachment, especially ones that not only overreach, but directly threaten you and me and the Constitution of the United States. What do I think they're going to do? Are they going to learn? I don't think so. Adam Schiff, in my mind, is a psychopath. Psychopaths lie, and manipulate people. And they have a lot of practice at it, and they're very good at it, and they try to intimidate people. They have no shame, no conscience. How would you feel? Try to put yourself in the shoes of Donald Trump, knowing he did absolutely nothing wrong, yet for 3 solid years, he had the Mueller investigation, prior to that, the FBI investigation, both with no predicate or foundation. They came up empty, and when that report that was going to be the basis of an impeachment couldn't be, they did this over a 6-minute conversation and delaying the aid for a couple of weeks. That's not common sense. That's an example of tyrants. Or, if you will, radical extremists, Democrat socialists, the Reds that have taken over the Democratic Party. Now, as promised, I want to briefly review. I'm looking at the clock. I have a few minutes left. Every month, the Department of Commerce, as their Bureau of Economic Analysis, they're responsible for coming out with a monthly report that estimates, and they're all estimates, by the way, what the real gross domestic product of the United States was by quarter. It's a quarterly report where they have 3 estimates. One is the advanced, then the second, and then the third estimate. And it's the second and third that's more reliable. The first is almost always revised, but there's no way to know which way it's going to go because it's revised because they have more information. The second and third estimate simply has more information. Came out with the number 2.1%. Now, I put at the very top, but I also have the report. You could read it at your leisure. But it's clear if you look at the last 2 years. Yeah, there have been some quarters where the final estimate was above 3%, but only 3 of them. Most are below 3% or right at it. But if you try to fit a line between that or on an annual basis, not a quarterly basis, it's usually between 2 and 2.5%. The key here is consistency. What would you like to see is quarter after quarter after quarter of 3% or more. You're not seeing that. And if you look back the last 11 years, you're not going to see it. We've had some very good quarters, even slightly above 4%, but they're few and far between. It's generally been under 4% and closer to 2%. So this is not a bad report, but it's certainly not a good report. As a matter of fact, it's very disappointing given the magnitude of the tax cut and the fact that we had to significantly go into debt to pay for it. Remember, the year we're in right now, the deficit is estimated to be over $1,000 billion. That's $1 trillion. So to pay for the shortfall in tax revenue, because the federal government is simply paying way too much, spending way too much money, the United States Treasury every week has to sell Treasury securities, bonds, notes, treasury bills, to pay the bills. And when the bills, bonds, and notes come due, they just reissue more. So the accumulation of all these debts is the national debt, and it's over $23 trillion and going up every single day. I think you're beginning to see why I call these the big spending two-party tyranny. They have no sense of financial responsibility. And it really doesn't matter if you vote Democrat or Republican. They both, once they get control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency, they go on a spending binge. And what they typically do, especially in divided government, which we have now, where the Democrats control the House and the Republicans control the presidency and the Senate, they all get together and behind closed doors and have omnibus bills. It's just more and more government spending. The Democrats get what they want, and the Republicans get what they want. And who gets screwed here? The American people. The burden of the debt is getting bigger and bigger, and it falls on even generations not born. We have to address it. Instead, we are having a very dangerous impeachment hearing. Danger, danger, danger. Warning, warning, warning. This cannot continue, will not continue. There'll be a day of reckoning. And when that happens, interest rates will suddenly spike upwards significantly. I'm talking 3%, 4%, 5% increases. Not all at once, but what will that do over time? It will greatly increase what the United States government, the federal government, has to pay in interest to get the money they desperately need to pay the bills. As a result, interest that the government has to pay will double and triple. And as that happens, as interest rates go up, and it's a prolonged process, it will squeeze out, force the federal government to cut spending. So instead of having a sense of urgency and vision and courage, it does take courage, first to tell the American people the problem and what you're going to do about it. Both parties have a gentleman's agreement not to go there, not really to point out that this cannot continue much longer. Now, it's continued for many, many years. This has been going on. It's going on almost 100 years. We're at least 90 years into it. But it's not getting any better. I think President Trump will win and win by a landslide. But when he finally leaves office, the debt could very, very well exceed $30 trillion. Remember, it's at $23 trillion now. And the reason is both parties will simply not address this. It needs to be addressed, something done about it right now. It should have been happening all along, but neither party wants to tell the truth to the American people. The Democrats are focused on staying in power by letting all the illegals come into the country. They're more concerned about getting citizenship to all the illegal aliens that are here, and they're somewhere between 30 and 60 million. No one knows the exact number. I think it's somewhere in between there, but I don't know. The government knows, or at least has estimates, but they're not talking. But what the Democrat Party wants to do is give all of those people that are here, or virtually all of them, citizenship. And the reason is not hard to understand. If 30 or 45 or 50 or 60 million are given citizenship, they anticipate that at least 2 out of 3 and maybe 3 out of 4 will vote Democrat. And if that happens, they firmly believe they will control government, the House, the Senate, and the presidency for decades to come. That's their game plan. That's their strategy to keep power and attain power. In other words, American citizens, American workers have been betrayed by the very party that for decades they supported. It's shameful, but that's what they're telling you when they say open borders. What they mean by open borders, if you get across the border, no matter how you come or where you come from, eventually, in the not too distant future, you will get citizenship. Do the American people support that? Do the American workers support that? No. But that's where the Democratic Party and the unions that support the Democratic Party are at. At one time, it was the Democratic Party and unions that made sure that the illegal alien population was kept deliberately low. Why? These millions or tens of millions of illegals are working here in jobs that the American people have done in the past, present, and future. You see, you need to be informed. You need to know what's going on. But that in and of itself is a challenge. For the last 3 years, your major television networks and newspapers, I call them the big lie media mob, have been lying to you and supporting the Democrats. And that's all you hear. You hear one-sided news, misleading, biased, and they omit what's really going on. Just like this impeachment. The process that the Democrats used, Adam Schiff and his Intelligence Committee, is scandalous. Scandalous. It didn't stop them. They just kept on going. And now they want more witnesses. They're not going to get them. I finally concluded that the facts, the evidence, the law, the Constitution, the American people all want Trump not guilty. The Democratic case is not a case. It's a stunt. and it was designed to smear and confuse those that try to follow it. The only way you're going to stop this, and I'm talking long-term, intermediate, and even the short-term, is eventually the American people will finally learn that it's a very bad habit and a dangerous habit to keep voting Democrat or Republican. If you do that, you're in essence voting for the status quo. So why this November, most likely I'll vote for Trump. I'm not going to be voting for anyone else. Trump is an outsider that at least is willing to take on the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, the bureaucracy, the so-called deep state, big lie media, the big lie media mob, the donor class, and really the owners of America. His only support is coming from the American people. And the American people know that. They really do. And that's why they come to his rallies. I find the rallies entertaining, but also informative. And every time he has one in any city, he draws thousands, tens of thousands, or more. And I think those numbers will go up when the American people realize they have been betrayed. The biggest betrayers are the Democratic representatives and senators and the bureaucrats. But the Republican Party is not much better. We should have had the wall after Ronald Reagan in 1986 had comprehensive immigration reform and gave citizenship to over 2.7 million, primarily Mexicans, not entirely. But both parties did not want a fence. So when Donald Trump entered the White House, there was only 350 miles out of approximately a 2,000-mile border with Mexico. And really, that's maybe half to 60% of the problem. The other 40% are people come here illegally, fly in to airports across the country for business reasons, education reasons. They're going to school. They're coming legally with visas, vacationing, tourism. But a significant number decide to stay. The only person that ran in 2016, and he had a very, very strong proposals to stop the illegal alien invasion. That's by building a big, beautiful wall. At most, he might have 500 miles of new border barrier fence, however you want to call it, done by the end of this year. I think that's being optimistic. But if he does come close, that's another reason to vote for Donald Trump, because I'll tell you, neither the Democrat nor Republicans wanted to give him any money. So it's Donald Trump, an outsider, that has to take on the entire establishment in Washington, from the bureaucracy, so-called deep state, and the House, the Senate, and the big lie media mob that supports him, and the wealthy that make sure their concerns are addressed. Tomorrow I will turn to and give you the latest updates on the impeachment hearing. I anticipate that there most likely will be no witnesses. That vote will be very, very close. And if there are no witnesses, this whole affair should be wrapped up in less than a week. I thought it would be wrapped up by Saturday. We'll see. Remember, we have the State of the Union message, the President Trump's State of the Union message Tuesday, February 4th. That's why I thought they would finally vote to acquit Donald Trump. And I think that will happen. And I think Donald Trump will actually get more votes than on the witness. The witness thing, I could go either way on that. But I think the senators of both parties are just tired of this. This was a bogus, phony, and very, very dangerous, ill-conceived stunt. A progressive propaganda stunt. It wastes your taxpayer money. It wastes the time and energies of your elected representatives, as well as government attorneys that work for the president and others, on something that never should have been brought. Shame on them. But I think they have revealed what they're up to. But what you're up against is many of the people that support this are ignorant of the facts, ignorant of the evidence, ignorant of the Constitution. And that's a challenge, because everyone is ignorant and everyone is bored or apathetic. That's the danger. Propaganda is designed to brainwash people, control people, indoctrinate people. So they really have one side of the story, not both sides. And usually not the right side. That's why I spent so much time playing the key testimony of President Trump's legal team. Most of it I already knew. They put a fine case together, but the Democrats didn't have a case. This was a stunt, a smear campaign, and they did it because they thought, just maybe, just by chance, they might get luck and actually impeach him. I thought they never had a chance. Remember, you have to get 67 votes. There's no way, in my mind, that could ever happen. So thank you for listening, and tomorrow I hope to get back to, I'm not going to say better stories, because I really need to update you as to what's happening with the viruses. The novel coronavirus. It's spreading quickly in China. However, it's not spreading in terms of sheer numbers, thank God, to the rest of the world. So by next Wednesday, I hope, at the very, very latest, I hoped it was going to be prior to the State of the Union message. I don't know. And I think this will mean a much bigger audience for Donald Trump come Tuesday. So I'll definitely discuss it on our next Wednesday show. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. With a voice of Richland College.
You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. And KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.